podcast listeners, Happy New Year. Let me take a moment to say how thankful I am to have you, the M Critters, in my emergency medicine and critical care life. Without you folks, I wouldn't have a show. And without a show, I'd probably be climbing up walls. So thank you for listening. Thank you for making the M Crit podcast what it is. And I hope you folks all have a wonderful 2012. So why am I talking to you today? The thing is, the last episode on the diagnostic workup of cervical spine injuries generated some controversy. People still want to be using plain films, and they want more evidence as to why I have made the statement that I don't use them very often at all anymore. I don't usually do this on the MCrit podcast. The way the podcast usually works is I read everything I can get my hands on. I come up with an evidence-based approach to my own practice. I practice that way. And when I'm pretty set in a practice pattern, I do a podcast on it. But I don't parse through the evidence on an individual study basis. I don't go through the methodology. I don't do that on the MCrit podcast very often. It's not what it's about. It's about my practice and hearing your impressions thereof. But for this one, we'll make an exception. This podcast is dedicated to Joe Rabinovich, and now is one of my colleagues at my medical center. And Joe is a really smart guy. He reads and he looks at the studies, and he's still convinced there's a role for plain films. So I'm going to take one more shot at convincing Joe, and maybe some of you in the audience. So first, as a little appetizer, as an amuse-bouche, if you will, let's talk about the worst-case scenario for sensitivity. And the study I would direct you to, and this is all in the show notes, is Mathen and Inaba in the Journal of Trauma 2007. This was a prospective study of trauma patients who couldn't be cleared by the Nexus rule. They got 3-view plain films and CAT scans. And the gold standard was evidence of injury during the entire hospitalization. In this study, there was a 45% sensitivity for plain films. That means they missed 55% of the injuries. 45% sensitivity. That's horrible. Horrible. Now, why is this so bad? Well, they took all comers. They took patients who were obtunded, patients who had normal mental status. They took patients who were major trauma. They took patients who were minor trauma. But, God, that is a horrible sensitivity, 45%. And there really should not be a variance of that just because these were patients who were in a major trauma center. Prevalence should not matter for sensitivity. Now, there might be a spectrum bias. If you put sicker patients in here, that might affect it. But like I said, this is the worst case scenario for sensitivity in a well-done study. There's been other studies out there showing even lower sensitivity, but most of those studies had some problems with them. I think this is probably a good number for worst case if you use plain films in all comers, 45%. And of interest, the prevalence of C-spine injuries was 10%. So that's patients who failed Nexus, 10% prevalence in a trauma center, all comers. So that kind of defines, I think, the borders of high risk is about a 10% incidence of injury. That's pretty much high risk in my mind. So let's move on to the main course here. Let's talk about the best case scenario for plain film sensitivity. The absolute best you're probably likely to find actually came out of the Nexus trial. And, you know, the original Nexus trial, huge trial, game changer, which was the New England Journal 2000. But in the Annals of Emergency Medicine in 2001, some of the authors from Nexus actually specifically looked at the question of whether plain films are adequate to screen for cervical spine injuries. And so they took the 818 patients who had injuries in the Nexus trial, and they looked at how many of those were discovered by plain films. And what they found is that plain films missed 320 of the 818. 320 were missed by the 818. Now, they go on to say that of those 320 misses, 237 of them didn't have perfect plain films. So about 75% of them didn't have perfect plain films. If you look at the 581 patients who had perfect plain films, who had cervical spine injuries, so perfect plain films with cervical spine injuries, that number is 581. they found 498 of those patients with injury. So 498 out of 581. What does that give you? That gives you a sensitivity of 85%. 85%. Now, be cognizant, in order to get that 85% sensitivity, they had to throw out an enormous number of plain films that might have had only tiny inadequacies. Things that you may or may not, if you're interpreting these yourselves, deem as making for inadequate plain films. And that's a key point to remember. We're going to come back to that. But 85% sensitivity, I think in the best case scenario, this is the absolute best you could get. This was retrospectively looking at all the crappy sets of 3-view series and dispensing with them. If you looked at only the absolutely perfect ones, 85% sensitivity. If you evaluated that performance by fracture as opposed to patients, it looks far worse. And the thing is that some of these patients had multiple injuries that were all missed by plain films. But if you look at patients only, not injuries, but patients only, 85%. Now, the actual paper said 89%, and that's because they were dispensing with Skywora patients as well. But there was a further analysis of the Skywora patients in the Nexus study, and that's in the show notes. And from what I could see, there's no indication that those Skywora patients had CT scans. It looks like they had a 3-view series that were deemed normal and then persistent neurological deficits or pain and got an MRI. But I can't see that these patients got CT scans. So I can't dispense with those unless I found out that they had pristine CTs as well. So I'm going to stick with that 85% number. Now, 85% is horrible for an injury like C-spine fracture. How do they get away with that? How do they get away with an 85% sensitivity? Well, the way they try to get away with it is that they say, don't use sensitivity, use negative predictive value. Now, if you've read anything I've written on evidence-based medicine, I tell you never, ever, ever use negative predictive value. It's a number that lies. And the reason it lies is because it's predicated on prevalence. If you went to the geriatric ward and you wanted to do a pregnancy test and your pregnancy test was flipping a coin, the negative predictive value of that coin toss on that geriatric ward would probably be pretty close to 100% negative predictive value. There might have been one patient boarding up there who had a 50% sensitivity for that coin toss because she was a 30-year-old female, but the negative predictive value for the whole ward is going to be close to 100%. You can't rely on negative predictive value if anything about your patient has a different prevalence or pretest probability than the cohort the NPV was established in. So they said that in their numbers, it was 99.6% negative predictive value. Well, that doesn't seem so bad. That means you missed 4 in 1,000. But they're missing a really key point here. So in order to examine that key point they're missing, we have to go on to a second study. We have to find out what the actual prevalence is in the patients I'm talking about. So the best study for that is the Canadian C-spine studies in the JAMA and New England Journal. Why are those the best? Because the entry criteria for those studies, these large, well-done studies, are exactly the patients we're discussing, which is acute trauma patients with alert mental status, injury within the past 48 hours, and stable conditions, stable vital signs, patients not in major trauma, patients not near coding. These are the ones that you guys are all trying to convince me plain films still work on. So the Canadian C-spine study is perfect for that. And when you look at the prevalence of C-spine injuries in that cohort, it was about 2%. And the Nexus trial is about 2.4%. So now we have an establishment of what I think is a low-risk group. We said 8, 10% is probably high-risk, and probably 2.4% is low risk. And you might have excellent negative predictive value in a group with that prevalence of C-spine injuries. But they're missing a really, really key point here. And it's the reason I can't recommend plain films despite the NPV looking so good, which is I'm not recommending plain films in all comers, in which case you might argue that NPV is decent. No. I'm telling you, run them through Nexus, run them through Canadian C-spine. And what you'll understand is if you do that, you have a very different prevalence of C-spine injuries if they failed the Canadian C-spine rule. If they fail the Canadian C-spine rule and you throw these numbers into a diagnostic calculator, what you get is a post-test prevalence of about 4%, 4.5, depending on which initial prevalence you use. That's not the same as 2.4%. That, in my mind, is now a moderate pretest probability before you go on to your plain films. And I don't think plain films are going to take you where you want in that group, in the group that's already failed clearance by Canadian C-spine rules. From what I could see, throwing the numbers all together, if you use plain films in that group, you will miss 1 in 100 injuries. These are patients who are very low risk to start and then fail Canadian C-spine. 1 in 100 C-spine injuries will be missed. If I look at the numbers from most of these studies, about half of those will be unstable C-spine injuries, dangerous C-spine injuries to miss. So 1 in 100 misses, 1 in 200 unstable misses. That's not sounding so great. But for you, you might interpret that as okay. You might say, you know, it's worth it for me to avoid 99 C-spine CTs if I'm only missing 1 in 100. But no, don't stop there. You see, now we have to go in and factor in the other stuff, which is in 75 of those 99 patients, those plain films are going to be deemed inadequate if you go by the Nexus rules of perfect three-view series. And as a result, you're going to be getting C-spine in those patients anyway, and now you've exposed them to two studies. But wait, it gets worse. If you really read through that plain film reanalysis of the Nexus data, you will find that it's not just that you need a perfectly adequate C-spine series, but they would advocate that if you have any abnormality such as loss of the normal cervical spine lordosis, meaning no bony abnormalities, you could see every single vertebrae, but the C-spine straight instead of having its normal curvature, you have to get a C-spine CT. They go on to say if there's any soft tissue swelling on those x-rays, you have to get a CT. That's going to also cut down on the patients you saved getting a CT scan. And what's worse, if you're interpreting these C-spine x-rays yourself and you miss those things, any smart lawyer will tell you, these Nexus folks right here who very well might be the experts at your trial will tell you, why didn't you see that the C-spine had lost its normal curvature? I don't care that there is no evidence of bony abnormalities and you can see all the vertebrae. It's obvious you should have gotten a CT because they've lost their normal curvature. Well, now these plain films are not looking all that enticing, but let's take it a step further. In the show notes is an article from the journal Medical Physics, in which a group of radiologists actually took all the variables they could find: radiation risk, cancer risk, the risk of missed injuries, the risk of possibly causing paralysis and unstable missed injuries, and they wanted to evaluate whether plain films or CT is a better strategy. And they put all those variables together. They did a Monte Carlo simulation, which is where you take a whole bunch of patients, all the data you have, you run them through a number of iterations, and you see what turns out. And what they found is that pretty much for every risk category, CT only is a smarter move. Look at the study and let me know what you think about that. So that's why I don't use plain films. There's really no patient group you could show me where that's a good idea. No patient group where you're probably not going to wind up doing CTs anyway in a majority of the patients if you really use the rules the Nexus folks put out there in order to establish what is an adequate plain film series. Most of them will not be adequate. And if you're going with slightly inadequate ones, then that 85% sensitivity I quoted is nowhere near the sensitivity. You're probably much closer to the 40, 45%. And I could say adamantly that in anything except the lowest risk patients, you should get CTs. If you're convinced still, after everything I've said, that in the lowest risk group, which I don't think exists, I think if you fail Canadian C-spine, you're no longer low risk, you're at least moderate risk. But if you think so, then make sure you range these patients. Make sure they have absolutely no midline tenderness left, and make sure they understand you might be missing an injury and they agree to avoid that CT scan. Well, let's take it a step further, because there were some comments, some particularly excellent ones from BF and Ollie Flowers about the use of MRI. So BF asked about that super hard situation where you've done that CT scan and the patient still has midline tenderness. Do they really need to go home in a collar? Do they really need an MRI? And the answer is probably yes. I put two articles in the show notes, one just published, Annals of Emergency Medicine from Australia. And in that study, 44% of the patients with persistent pain in the midline had an MRI abnormality. Second study was done in the Shock Trauma Center using 40 slice CTs. And 3 out of the 20 patients who had a pristine neurologic exam and only had persistent neck pain, 3 out of those 20 had MRI findings after a negative CT, and one of those patients had an unstable injury. So yeah, if they still have persistent midline tenderness, you're sure it's not paravertebral, it's midline, either send them out in a collar or get an MRI. Now, Ollie Flower, who is a brilliant neurointensivist, Ollie asked where I got that number, 1 in 3,000 for the unstable misses, and it's pretty much a back of the napkin calculation based on how many we saw at the Shock Trauma Center with pristine CTs and then an MRI demonstration of an unstable injury. There's going to be a great deal larger a number of just injuries that were missed on CT and found on MRI. In the most recent shock trauma data, 24% of clinically unevaluable patients with pristine CTs had abnormalities on their MRI. But as to the number of those patients who would have actually pithed themselves if you moved their head too much, I think the number probably is somewhere in the 1 in 3,000, 4,000, 2,000, depending on what your cohort has range. It's not very frequent, but it's frequent enough that you probably should still be getting MRIs on these patients, I think. And I'd love to hear your comments. So this is not going to replace the next podcast. The next podcast will still be zooming at you next Monday. I just wanted to get this out here, demonstrate some of the evidence for why I think that in pretty much every risk group, plain films are dead. As always, I'd love to hear your comments. If this is the kind of format you like, let me know too. I don't think I'll be doing it even if you like it. It's not my thing. It's not why I started the podcast. This is more Dave Newman's thing, and he does an excellent job at the Smart EM podcast. But for this particular issue, I thought it was worth doing. Happy New Year, everyone. Again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for what you've done for the show. We have some incredible things coming out in 2012, some things I think you're really going to like. But for today, I will say, this is Scott Weingart for the MCRIT podcast, saying bye-bye.